You know, as most of you know by now, I'm a lot more humorous on Sunday morning. But this is one day when humor escapes me. It's been a solemn day for me for 15 years now. In all the years I've pastored since, I've never missed a 9/11 worship service where we didn't pay tribute as we're doing today. I was not one of the heroes of 9/11. I don't claim to be. But when news broke of what happened, my church in Connecticut released me for 3 months to volunteer down at Ground Zero from September to December to work with police officers and firefighters and some unsung heroes that are not mentioned very often, the iron workers. They had no chaplains. That was the first place I stopped. Do you remember the cross on top of their trailer? I stopped there first before I went anywhere else to spend time with those guys because they were not trained to be first responders. They were construction workers, big, strong guys who were broken by what they experienced every day. When I came home from that experience, I liked to paint, and I painted that painting to my left, your right, sort of to decompress, to just that image of those guys raising that flag. It was almost like Mount Suribachi in Iwo Jima. It had that effect on me, that there's no demon in hell, there's no terrorist on the face of the earth that will defeat this nation. And out of the rubble, that flag flew proudly. You know, no one here this morning will ever forget the devastating blow our nation and our community took 15 years ago. The events of the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and that farm field in Pennsylvania will rest in our hearts and our minds right up to this very day. You know, being a New Yorker, I watched the World Trade Center go up in 1971. It was the pride of the city. And she stood there for 31 years as the city's ambassador. Whenever you entered in or exit, you couldn't help but see those beautiful twin towers on the southern tip of the island of Manhattan. On that morning of September 2001, there were 430 companies working out of those two towers, the North and South Towers. On any given day, there were 50,000 workers working at their desks in both towers. 140,000 visitors visited the World Trade Center every single day in the city's life. I'm telling you, it's amazing. It's amazing that we didn't lose more than we did that day. At 8:45 a.m., workers in both towers were seated at their desks, unwrapping their bagels, twisting off the covers of their styrofoam cups of coffee. Everything was normal. It was a typical business day in the nation's financial hub on the southern tip of the island, 8:45. Then 8:46 came, and our nation and the world was changed forever. Just a minute later, a hijacked American Airlines passenger jet, flight number 11 out of Boston with 92 passengers on board, slammed into the North Tower and put a gaping hole in that building and set it in a plume of fire as jet fuel ignited. Confusion. Chaos, depression struck the hearts of the people, not only in the buildings, but the people down below. It was a shock. Most of us thought it was an aviation accident. No one in either tower knew what was happening. Was it an aviation accident? Was it an explosion? Was it a terrorist act? People were just in awe of what they just witnessed. Persons in the South Tower looked from their desks in horror as they saw the sister tower engulfed in flame and debris spewing out from its structure. And then 19 minutes later, if there was any thought, if it was an accident or not, was dismissed. A second hijacked United Airlines airline, flight number 175, also out of Boston, 65 passengers on board, slammed into the South Tower, leaving both towers crippled and on fire. At 9:17 a.m., the Federal Aviation Administration shut down all New York City airports. 4 minutes later, at 9:21, the New York and New Jersey Port Authority shut down all tunnels and bridges in New York. You could not enter in or leave the city. And then at 9:30, President Bush, who was down in Sarasota, Florida, he took to the airwaves and he said that our country was under attack. 10 minutes later at 9:40 a.m., FAA, never before in the history of our country, shut down all flights in the continental USA. There were no flights in the air. They were all told to land their aircraft because they weren't sure who was the enemy and who was not. At 9:43 a.m., American Airlines flight number 77, 64 passengers on board, crashes into the Pentagon, sending a huge plume of smoke into the air, and evacuation began immediately. At 9:45, just 2 minutes later, the White House was forced to evacuate and the key leaders to go down into the depths of the building where it was safe and they could still command this nation. At 10:05, 1 hour and 20 minutes from the initial attack, the South Tower of the World Trade Center, I never thought I'd ever see that in my life, collapsed to the streets below. A massive cloud of dust chased people up the narrow streets as the dust worked its way through the narrow passageways of Lower Manhattan. 5 minutes later at 10:10 a.m., United Airlines flight number 93, also hijacked, 45 passengers on board, crashes into Somerset County, Pennsylvania, southeast of Pittsburgh. All indications were that that plane was destined to crash into the White House, the official residence of the President of the United States. At 10:28 a.m., 1 hour and 44 minutes from the time of the initial attack, the World Trade Center's North Tower collapses from top to bottom like a stack of pancakes. And in a matter of seconds, both towers were gone, as if they were never there. It hit us to the core of our very being. 1 hour and 44 minutes. That's all it took. In its wake, over 3,000 people died. 2,800 plus people in the World Trade Center lost. 125 killed in the Pentagon. 343 FDNY firefighters, folks, I can't even get my head around that, perished in those two towers. 75 law enforcement officers gone. The fire was so intense down in Ground Zero, I witnessed it with my own eyes, that it burned at 2,300 degrees for 70 straight days. It was an inferno. 17 pregnant women lost their husbands. one of whom was in our church. In fact, 3 weeks ago, Barbara Mora, who was visiting our home, attended worship here. She lost her nephew, and her niece gave birth to a child who would never see her father. I pray we never forget September 11th. I joke with you sometimes that sometimes on Sunrise Highway, my Christianity is challenged. I had one guy say to me, just forget it, move on. And I tell you, if I wasn't a Christian, he would have had to see a periodontist. No, we won't forget. On that infamous morning in the history of our nation, the world witnessed heroic acts performed by everyday heroes. We watched firefighters and police officers rush into the building that was threatened by collapse. They continued to climb north in spite of their radios blaring that the structure was unsound and it was going to come down. They kept climbing. And we've all seen photos of people on their iPhones taking pictures as they fled the building of these firefighters carrying 70 and 90 pounds of fire gear up that narrow stairway. They kept heading north. On that morning and the days that followed, we witnessed whatever your political persuasion is, this is not a political statement, but we watched the steadfastness of Mayor Giuliani. From the moment he arrived on the scene, he took charge and he gave us a sense of comfort because most of us were wondering, is everything going to be all right? Are we under attack? And like a field marshal in some great theater of combat, he mustered the city, the nation, and the world behind him as he attacked what appeared to be an insurmountable task of rescue, recovery, and rebuilding the city. And there he stood with both commissioners, fire and police, white mask over his face, reassuring everyone that it was going to be okay. Calm words in the midst of the battle. Now, mind you, just prior to that attack, Mayor Giuliani was on his last political leg as an unpopular figure. And yet, from September 11th on, his approval rating was 91%. And to this day, he's called the nation's mayor. And I'm not endorsing Mayor Giuliani from the pulpit, so IRS, relax. On that tragic day, he garnered the respect and the backing of both Democrats and Republicans alike. He was a shining example of a leader with great courage. He became an everyday hero that morning. Our nation rose to the occasion, both Democrat and Republican, in a unified front of resources and prayer and resolve. I could still visualize in my head how I wish it would return to Congress when they all stood on the steps of Congress and prayed. It was a beautiful sight. I pray it returns. I've always been proud to be an American. If I ever forgot that, my World War II father would make sure I remembered. But I was especially proud that day. And I've been even more proud ever since. But you see, these high-profile figures like Giuliani and Bush and the Congress, they were sworn to duty to be that leader in the time of crisis. When I was down at Ground Zero, I knew a commander who once worked for me, and he told me some inside stories that nobody really knows about, but that there were insurance brokers and investment brokers and office personnel who had an opportunity to leave the tower, and they didn't, but stayed behind to help. These are the unsung heroes. You don't see their pictures. You don't hear their stories. They were working right alongside the firefighters and the police officers. And by the way, that nephew of Barbara Moore I spoke of, he was out of the building when he called his pregnant wife and said, I'm out and I'm safe. He went back in again because he was 29 years old, he was strong, and he helped those firefighters carry their equipment north, and he never made it out and never saw his newborn child. dozens upon dozens of everyday heroes, fathers, mothers, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, nieces, nephews, never made it out because they put the safety of others above themselves. They were willing to make a sacrifice. We will never know the stories because they went down with the two towers. People called their loved ones, but yet went back in as this young man did. You see, it wasn't a sports celebrity. I've had sports heroes in my life, if you want to call them heroes. Mickey Mantle, Jackie Robinson. But are they really heroes or are they just ball players? You see, Todd Beamer, that name may make sense to you. He was an everyday guy. He loved wearing baseball hats. He loved playing two-hand touch football, not in some NFL stadium, but in the school playground in Hightstown, New Jersey, where he lived. He wasn't a soldier. He wasn't a cop. He wasn't a fireman. He was a businessman. And he was on Flight 93 out of Newark, headed for San Francisco, when it was discovered that his 757, because they were talking on the phone to their loved ones, that hijackers were hijacking planes and using them as bombs to hit U.S. targets. And somehow, from somewhere, Beamer and others decided to foil the hijackers who were planning on crashing their aircraft into the White House. And from somewhere deep inside this businessman, this father from Hightstown, New Jersey, this everyday guy like you and me, somewhere from deep down inside, a place most persons don't even realize they have, he shouted, "Let's roll." And they charged down the aisle and they overpowered the hijackers. And we'll never know how many lives they saved on the ground by that heroic act. All 45 passengers were killed because of the heroism displayed that day. You know, John 15, 13 says, "Greater love no one hath than one who's willing to lay down his life for a friend." None of us truly know how we would respond to a life-threatening danger unless we've been there. Names like Harry Ramos of Mae Davis Corporation, of the World Trade Center, father of two, everyday guy, lived in New Jersey, told everyone to get out of the building while he stayed with an injured coworker, and he never made it out. He could have left. He could be living in New Jersey right now. He stayed, and he made a sacrifice. All the firefighters, all the law enforcement officers, and so many others running in while everyone else was running out. And so Ed read our text this morning. I want to tie it into that. The Apostle Paul says, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any fellowship with his spirit, if any tenderness, any compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit, one in person, doing nothing out of self-ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourself. Each of you should look not on your own interests only, but also the interests of others. You see, I believe that's what separates people from being heroes. They're willing to do something to make life better for someone else, even if it costs them their own. They come in all shapes and sizes. They're Audie Murphy to Mother Teresa, from General Patton to Todd Beamer. But one thing's for sure, in order to be a hero, you have to be willing to sacrifice. You see, friends, we've got firefighters here. Charlie, you named so many of your friends. And I'm glad you wore your firefighter shirt from the FDNY today. You've rushed in many burning buildings, my friend. That's why I never tried to be a firefighter. I can't even stand being around people who smoke. But not everybody was called to do what you did, to run into a burning building. Not everybody was called to dodge bullets like police officers, and all of these VFW members that are seated here this morning, we may never have to run down the aisle with a service tray to foil hijackers like Todd Beamer and the others. But we are all called as followers of Jesus Christ to be sacrificial in our living and not be selfish in the way we live our lives. To look at opportunities where we can make somebody else's life better simply by sacrificing. You see, friends, we remember 9/11 this morning and how fortunate we are to be alive in this land. I've been all over the world, literally. And I always thank God when I land at JFK that I live here in this country. We should be happy for the freedoms we enjoy. But I will tell you this, just as your salvation is not free because Christ gave up his life and his blood on Calvary's cross, our freedom in this nation is not free either. It was paid with the blood, the sweat, the tears of our veterans and our active military personnel who are still serving in harm's way. I preached a message one time in my church in Connecticut, and a person came up to me and said, "Pastor, how could you say that when there are people in the congregation who are not American?" And my answer was, "But we're in America." And I don't say any disparaging remarks against other nationalities. Don't get me wrong. But we are talking about America, aren't we? And so we will not forget. We choose to keep their memories alive and to make sure they're never forgotten. And as I look out at you, I see the potential for all of you and me to be an everyday hero. Yes, maybe not rushing into buildings and ducking bullets in combat, but we can be heroes to our neighbors and our families and our community, our nation and our world by being sacrificial and doing things to better the lives of others. As Paul put it, by not looking out for our own interests, but looking out for the interests of others as well. You know where it says, "They shall know we are Christians by how well we sing." No. "They shall know we're Christians by how beautiful our building is." It says they shall know we are Christians by our love. And so I close with a quote from a hero of mine. Not a first responder, and not a military general, and not the mayor of New York City. She's been my hero for a long time, Mother Teresa, who was recently beatified as a saint. She said, "Everything we do is a drop in the ocean. But if we don't do it, that drop would be missing forever." You don't think you're doing much, but it's noticed by God. And when we do it, God is well pleased. Amen.